Well, we just heard the thrilling Game 7 of that 91 World Series between Atlanta and Minnesota. It went 10 innings, and the Twins prevailed to win it 1-0 over the Braves as Jack Morris outduels John Smoltz in a game that was simply classic. And joining us now is the guy who scored the winning run that night at the Metrodome, Dan Gladden. He joins us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline, of course, now one of the broadcasters on the radio side for the Twins. And Danny, thanks so much for spending some time with us. I hope all is well with you out in Arizona, and hopefully we're going to see you soon at Target Field.
I think that that'll be the case. But every time I've seen it before we go on, you always give the weather report, and I got to tell you, I'm out in Arizona. 93, 94 today, sunny, shorts by the pool. So everything is good out here in Arizona right now.
Yeah, jump in that pool for me, would you, Danny? That sounds pretty good. All right, I know you've talked about this a lot over the last 30 years or so, but it really goes down as one of the most iconic fall classics ever, the 88th World Series between Atlanta and Minnesota. It goes 10 innings. You're on third base. Gene Larkin is up. The Braves pull the outfield in. So from your standpoint, being the base runner, if the ball's hit in the air and it's fairly deep, you have to know you're going to score, right?
I would hope so. I would think that, you do that checklist. Who's got the stronger arms out there, where they're at, where they're positioned. Not only, you're trying to defend against, that line drive, maybe head high in the infield. You don't want to have somebody catch that, get doubled up, and you want to make sure it lands before you go. And, the fact that Gene Larkin got it well in the air, deep enough to where everybody could just kind of relax a little bit and just kind of parade on home to home plate and give the guys in the dugout enough time to greet you at home plate.
Is there ever a day that goes by where somebody doesn't bring it up that, hey, there's Dan Gladden. He scored the game-winning run, Game 7 of that fabulous 91 World Series?
You know what's been cool about this? If there's anything that's, I guess, cool with this pandemic going around that things are shut down, is that we're replaying a lot of the historic games. The Minnesota Twins in particular, 87-91. Talking to other guys around the country as well, in St. Louis, they're kind of doing the same thing. They're running some of the reruns that they had, the success that they had as well. So it's nice to get some phone calls, some text messages from a lot of people that were either at that game or were part of it. And just some of the things that they remember having been part of that historic 91 season.
Yeah, pandemonium at the Metrodome, over 55,000 fans in the building. Of course, outside the venue, it was chaos. I was at the game. I remember walking away from the Metrodome after it was all said and done. I'm like, wow, the Twins have actually won their second World Series in 4 years. And, of course, a guy that you know very well, Jack Morris, was on the mound, and he had a singular moment in time. I mean, have you ever seen a guy pitch better in a high-stakes game?
Not in a, does it get any higher than Game 7 of a World Series? I'm not sure, but, I've been by, I've played behind, Jack has had some other good games. Frank Viola, of course, had some, very good games. And I'm talking about during the season and, even in 87, first couple games, the playoffs, that nothing as epic as that, because that game there, it really started in the 10th inning of the night before in Game 6. All the one-run games, the extra inning ball games, and the Charlie Lee Brandt, the Kirby Puckett matchup, the home run, Jack Buck's famous call, we'll see you tomorrow night. That set up the stage. And I like to tell people that, when we came up into that clubhouse, if you ever been to the Metrodome, there's like about 250 steps to get up top to get into the clubhouse. And then to get in there and see the excitement that we had in that clubhouse with Puck. But at the same time, you look over and there's Jack Morris, taking his cap off. It was game face on for him. And there was just such a great feeling knowing that there's your horse you're going to ride tomorrow night. And you couldn't ask for a better guy. And that was something, through Jack Morris's career, to end up at Minnesota, his home team, after all the great years he's had in Detroit, to be able to go out there and pitch Game 7, that has to be one of his highlights of his career. Not only the 91 season, but also being able to pitch Game 7 and the way he pitched it.
Yeah, and a guy who went to the Hall of Fame 2 years ago. Dan Gladden, our guest here on CCO on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline. And yeah, you're right, Danny. I remember those steps from the dugout to the clubhouse at the Metrodome. When you got done, you felt like you were on the Stairmaster. It was a long way up.
It sure was. I mean, if you come down those stairs and I say, you know what, I forgot something, and you got to get back up there, that's where the clubhouse kids come in handy. You get down there and say, hey, Clayton Wilson, could you run up? I forgot something in my locker. Give me a new set of batting gloves or something.
Yeah, and I had TK on last night, and you brought up Game 6, because without Game 6 and the heroics of Kirby Puckett, not only the walk-off home run, we'll see you tomorrow night, Jack Buck, as you said, and then John Gordon, touch them all, Kirby Puckett. He also scaled the plexiglass to rob Ron Gant of extra base hits in a very close game. So Kirby Puckett set the stage. In a 24-hour span, one could argue that's the greatest span of time in Minnesota sports history, because you had an unbelievable, dramatic Game 6 and then the great theater that Game 7 was.
No question about it. And it wasn't, you know, the players or the, you know, they're the actors out there on the field, but the fans, they're the audience. They're the ones that also are feeding off of this great display of some good baseball. And you know, Smoltz and Morris, that was baseball at its finest. And, you know, I was watching Game 6, and I didn't realize, I think Puckett caught that ball early in the ballgame of Game 6. It wasn't like it was in the eighth or ninth
right.
inning. I think it was very early in the ballgame, but at the same time, still a dramatic, big catch. You don't know what it else would have led to, but, you know, Game 6, and then to be able to, you know, go into the clubhouse, enjoy it, but then know that you've got to be able to kind of enjoy it when you leave the clubhouse, enjoy it with your family, get home, and get ready for the next day. And that's how we always pretty much did it all year, when Tom Kelly would say, stand on even keel. You win a big game, don't get too high. You lose a tough game, don't get too low. Just don't porpoise. Just stay right there, just bobbing in the water, and then eventually Game 7 comes around. All right, guys, now you can go ahead and really enjoy it.
Yeah, I love that TK quote in the clubhouse at Target Field. We're all in this boat together, everybody grab an oar. And that's exactly what you guys did back in 91. It was a collective team effort, maybe led by Jack Morris, Kirby Puckett, yourself. But you needed all hands on deck. And it's funny, because you talked about the fans being the audience, the Homer Hankies. I mean, it was pandemonium in that Metrodome. Can you imagine, Dan, and look, we all want baseball back, and hopefully it's coming back. But can you picture a Game 7, say, you know, way out on the horizon, late October, early November, where the stakes are as high, but nobody's in the venue watching? Could you possibly replicate what you had in 91?
Well, if there's nobody in the stands, I don't think you would get the emotion. Players feed off of, you know, we talk about adrenaline and stuff, and can you control it? Some people can't. You know, you get the adrenaline either from a play, something that happens out on the field, or you can feed off the fans. And, you know, the frenzy that they start to get into, you feel it. You kind of rise up a little bit because you're part of it. So if there's nobody in the stands, I don't think you'd replicate a Game 7 like that. I don't think, you know, there's too many World Series that are going to be able to replicate that. I was on the Internet the other day, and I was just, you know, I'm starving for baseball information. And they rated out the one, I think there's been 175 World Series. And they rated them out, and I'm going, okay. And it said, list the top 25. And I get down to about five. I go, you mean tell me the Twins are going to go back the other way? And the Twins 91 World Series was ranked number 2. And every other World Series had a nice little two-three paragraph about it and described it. When it got to Game 2, there was nothing written other than the Twins number 2. They won. They beat the Atlanta Braves. And so I was a little disappointed, but they talked about some of the other World Series that I recall and in our era. And it was just kind of fun to be able to kind of remember some of the other World Series that were happening.
Yeah, and I know you're a baseball purist, Danny, and you think about, you know, 87, what you guys did, you know, coming out of nowhere to win your first title. Then 88, Kirk Gibson, Dennis Eckersley, that, you know, historic home run that Gibby hit for the Dodgers against the A's, and then in 91. So within the span of a few years, you had some World Series that went down as instant classics.
Absolutely. You talk about that Gibby one, and Gibby's was a teammate of mine, a personal good friend. You know, and again, you've got to put that up there with maybe one at bat that he had, and is as historic as, I don't want to say as historic, but it's close to what Jack Morris and the Twins did in 91 with Game 7 and the dramatics about it. You've got Dennis Eckersley. You've got Kirk Gibson, who blew his hamstring out. That was the year that Gibby signed with the Dodgers. I don't know if you remember the prank that they played on Gibby in spring training with the shoe polish on his hat. And he put his hat on, and everybody was laughing at him. And he stormed out of spring training. And, you know, Tommy Lasorda had to call him and coax him back. And Gibby was so hot, he goes, "I just want to know who that guy is." So he made, at a team meeting, and he made that guy who did it stand up. And it was, I want to say it was a left-hander named Ojeda, maybe, that was a veteran guy and was just trying to, you know, I could see the joke, but you don't play jokes on Kirk Gibson. You know, I learned that kind of the hard way. So he's and he goes, "Hey, I'm here to win, not for you guys to clown around and have fun." And the Dodgers went on and had a super series.
Yeah, and he hobbled around the base paths. I watched the replay a few weeks ago because here in the pandemic, I mean, you're going down these rabbit holes on YouTube, and 3 hours later you resurface. But it was a classic at bat. You know, Vin Scully, Joe Garagiola on the call for NBC, and Scully said after he hit the ball, the greatest drama was, would he be able to get around the bases, because he was limping that badly.
You know, he told me, he said, that's the adrenaline. And he was sitting underneath. He was hit tips and balls off a batting tee. Came in there and he told one of the clubhouse kids, "Go tell Tommy, I'm available for an at bat." And you got to understand that I think it was Davis that walked prior to that to allow that.
Yes.
Set that stage up, and sure enough, Gibby walked up there and took a couple of swings and hobbled out of there and battled. You know, back then, 89 or 88 wasn't, there were scouting reports, nothing like it was today. But, you know, and you talk about the Didier scouting report that he said anytime 3-2, he's going to backdoor slider you. And sure enough, Gibby, you watch him, he steps out and you can see him talking to himself and he's convincing himself there's the scouting report. This situation, here's what he's going to throw me. Actually reached out, went out over the plate. And to be able to hook it. So to be able to kind of stay with a gut feeling and then to be able to execute it, is pretty good.
Yeah, and you see the car behind the right field pavilion at Dodger Stadium, the brake lights slam on because the guy heard the call on the radio and he said, "Why did I leave so early?" But
stop
and Danny.
It. Stop it. Are you saying all the Dodger fans, that's the rumor. They showed up late, they left early.
Exactly. Got to beat that traffic. But Danny, and you kind of fall under this same umbrella. You go back to 84, Jack Morris and Kirk Gibson are teammates on a dominant Tiger team that started 35-5, and they won the World Series. They were wire-to-wire winners. And then we saw what Gibby did in 88, Morris in 91. You've had that, you know, that school of hard knocks approach, you know, through the years. What's that common thread about guys wanting to win? And I think we've even seen it with Michael Jordan, The Last Dance, here with the ESPN documentary. Winners are all about winning, aren't they?
You know what? And that's the common thread with the players you kind of described. And I'm going to add, you know, when Chili Davis came in 91, he wants to win. You know, it was a bunch of guys that wanted to win. And that's the common thread. Whereas, you ask some of these metrics people, where's that? Where's the will to win? Where show the heart of a player when he goes out there and plays day in and day out? Don't forget, 162 games, a long season. And to be able to go out there and try to accomplish something and stay at a high level, to be able to win, it lacks that a little bit as to, you know, which guys are the true winners or which guys truly come out here and they care if they win or lose. Perfect example to me was when I was in the radio booth and A.J. Brzezinski came up, you know, A.J., nobody liked him. And it was because he wanted to win. He got traded to the Giants, and he only lasted a year because when he went there, he wanted to win. And the Giants were in that category of we're just kind of, you know, hopefully we get to the playoffs. There was nothing real serious. Had a bunch of kind of goofy guys on the team. And, you know, it's the common thread that they want to win. And like you said, Michael Jordan motivates other people to get up a little, another level. And that's what is important that, to me, is when you evaluate a player or person at that matter, is what's his will to win? What's he going to do to win? And I think that maybe that's lacking a little bit right now. Everybody wants to win. But at the same time, what are you going to do? You're going to sacrifice and go out there that particular night and help your team win.
Yeah, that's a great point. And one more thought, Danny, before I let you jump back in that pool out there in Phoenix where the temp is in the 90s. Okay, so you guys won Game 7 in 91 on October 27th. That was a Sunday night. You had the twin parades through the Twin Cities 2 days later on October 29th. And then on Halloween, there was the historic blizzard that buried the Twin Cities with almost 30 inches of snow. Did you get out of town before the snow came?
That was the day that they flew to the White House, and they came back, and they were the last plane to land in Minneapolis, I believe, that night of that blizzard. So did I get out of town? I missed the flight. I didn't go to the White House that time. I went to, a Rod Stewart concert, I think, the night before with a couple other players. Got in very, very late, and I just needed an hour or two sleep before I get up and go, and just overslept and didn't make it. By the time I woke up, turned the TV on, the team was at the White House. So, the only flight I ever missed.
Wow. Well, tonight's the night, right? Did he sing that one?
Yeah. I mean, you know what? You talk about what's going to happen with baseball, and I'm starving for information, and, you know, I contact the people that I know that are somewhat connected and have a good idea of what's going on. I truly believe that, you know, that when we open up the states, that then I think that there's a protocol in place, not only for sports, but for people. That's going to apply for sporting events. And I think that the Arizona Diamondbacks yesterday opened up their facility, their Chase Field, their big league ballpark, plus their minor league facility here for players to come in and start working out. So there's a push here. And I believe that it's going to be announced, if not this weekend, then early next week, that here's the timeline. We're going to have probably 2 to 3 weeks of spring training. Rosters, of course, will be expanded. I'm under the understanding that your spring training is going to be held at your home ballpark. So that would be great at Target Field. And you can monitor these kids and be able to, you know, test them, which that's what the players want, important. And just be able to kind of get into shape, get back into shape, and just kind of work out for 2 to 3 weeks and then start some games. I'm saying I think July 4th is a great date. You're probably going to play with no fans. And by then, mid-July, we're going to have to find out where we are with the virus. And then we'll start letting people kind of come into the ballpark. The biggest concern for the players is, you know, catching it. But at the same time, the biggest concern for the owners is we start this up, and then all of a sudden come September, come playoff, it hits us again, and they got to shut it down. Because, you know, you got to understand, there's a lot of money here at stake, not only for the players, but also for the owners. And the owners are entitled, and their fear is that, you know, we're going to pay these guys their salary for how many games they play, but then all of a sudden come September, baseball gets shut down again. And then they don't recoup any money from the playoffs, and that's a big ticket. You know, that's some big money right there. So I think the players need to adjust, and let's get out there and play.
Yeah, no doubt, Danny. You said it very well. I think a lot of folks are craving the chance to watch baseball, and hopefully somewhere down the road get back into ballparks like Target Field, which is such a gem, especially when the weather's good. So hopefully that happens soon.
I'm confident that it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. And it's going to be different. No fans out there. What's the emotion of the players? What's the competition going to be like? Is it going to be, they're just saying no high fives and you got a separation and stuff. And my concern, my thought is, well, if everybody is tested and everybody's negative, why then can I not sit by my teammate? He's negative. I'm negative. Everybody allowed in here is negative. So why do we have to, do what they're saying? And that is sit in the stands 6 feet apart. You got to wear a mask. Things like that. So,
Can you imagine you scoring that winning run in a game seven? And there is no dog pile, and that's basically what they're telling players moving forward. That's part of the protocol. So hard to fathom.
Yeah, and that's probably part of the negotiations too. Is that that's part of the game? Is this celebration part of it and the excitement? So that's why I think if it's going to be that way, then you're going to see a different game.
Danny, thanks so much for spending part of your Saturday with us. Have a great Memorial weekend, and enjoy the pool.
You got it. Thank you a lot. Thanks a lot.
All right, very good. He's Dan Gladden. He came to you on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline, scored that winning run, Game 7, 91 World Series, Twins 1, Braves 0 in 10 innings, and, of course, now a Twins broadcaster. And at some point, you're going to hear him back on the airwaves calling games right here on News Talk 830 WCCO.